Hello and welcome to episode 339 of the Rilo and Slappy Show. Today is January 9th, 2023. I'm Rilo McFlugel, and with me is my co-host Slappy Jones. Show notes page for this episode will be mcflugel.com/339. And this will also be Get On Zero episode number 31. We haven't had a Get On Zero episode in a while, and we also haven't had a guest on for Get On Zero in a while. So welcome back to the Rilo and Slappy Show, and welcome to your first Get On Zero episode, Cody.
Thanks a lot, guys. How are you guys doing?
Great. So, you know, as you know, we dumped the shtick of bringing up tractors every episode, which really didn't take up much energy or time. And now we've just kind of, you know, you need a shtick.
What are we without a shtick, you know?
Right. Yeah. And we ended up accidentally just talking about Philadelphia sports for like the first 20 minutes of each episode. So, Cody.
Yeah, sit tight.
Tell us what you think about Philadelphia sports.
Almost makes me feel like I should have a beer open for this game night. Style.
Yes, indeed. Well, anyway, our Flyers, as I'm sure Cody is a huge Flyers fan, like all our listeners, continue their march to the Cup as they're up 3-0 again tonight. Although they lost less the other day, didn't they?
Yeah, I fell asleep, went to you. Bed, and they were getting
smacked around. That was the Leafs. Who was that? I was watching a little bit of that game. Yeah.
Yeah, it was the Leafs. They were hanging in, and then it just
didn't go well.
Wheels fell apart. I didn't even realize they were playing.
Yeah, they got the Sabres.
Ah,
but all right, that's
all right. And before
it cuts out, yeah, that's what I was waiting for, to see the name disappear.
Yeah, but let's also just say, you know, number one seed in the NFC
is locked up. It's on lock.
Number one in our hearts. Yeah, Philadelphia Eagles. So.
Good job, guys. I'm rooting for you because you guys root hard, and I'm not much of a football guy, so I'm happy.
Might as well jump on with the Eagles.
There we go. Perfect. So, all right. Let's talk about why we brought you here. Why are you on Zero Fiat?
Well, because you convinced me back in 2021, and about 2 months later, I joined you. That's really how it went. You know, everybody, what was the conversation before Get On Zero? There was kind of a like short selling the dollar idea. But there was a lot, it was like in sort of a trading way. And then you guys were like, well, no, how about we just like not use things that suck? And that made sense. And so here I am.
Nice. So how long, you said it's been a few months. So, or a few months after that, when did you start?
Oh, sorry about that. I was December of 2021, actually. Give me just a second to calm her down, because I don't know what's going on. Sorry.
No, that's all right. While you're tending to that, I'll throw some fill in stuff. It's funny you said, when you said 2021, I was like, oh man, he must have his years wrong. There's no way it's been that long, but we're in 2023 already, and we started in what, October of 2021. So yeah, it is all the way back then. So it's time flies when you're having fun.
My microphone was muted there. I apologize. I was talking. So everyone missed what I had to say, which was very insightful.
No,
I was just saying, you started in October, but we were kind of kicking the tires in August, September. Remember, we had a couple episodes there. We were kind of maybe we brought someone on. I can't remember exactly, but I remember talking about it in like August. And then October, you went in a couple months later. I did.
Yeah, let me see. When was the first Get On Zero episode? Because we had JW on.
Yeah. And that was that the last time he was on? We haven't had him on in a while.
Yeah, it was. So the first Get On Zero episode was December of 2021.
Really? What did we talk about, though, leading up to that? Because I thought we did some episodes before you actually went in all in.
I think you're right.
We might have had some guests or something. I can't even remember who was on.
Rallo on the Lamb.
Okay, sorry about that. I was really trying not to have that happen during the recording.
We like dogs.
That's all right.
Dogs are welcome here.
Okay, good. So, yeah, I guess as I was trying to say, I started in December, mostly. I think I had something going on where it took time to get it set up. But, you know, I experimented around with the fold card for a while and started out doing it that way. And then eventually, just a few months ago, started doing the, I guess, the Rallo way. And now I live on the credit card and then just pay it off at the end of the month, which I found to be a lot nicer. Just mechanically for me.
Yeah. So can you go through kind of what your fold card strategy was before that?
Because we have a fold card.
Something that either of us really do. I don't think.
Right. I have the card, but I don't really use it. I have like $3 on it, and I've used it in the past, but I never was using it to be on zero. But anyway, I'd be interested to hear what you were doing with that.
Yeah. So basically it was, you know, you might as well get rewards back because like it was free to like put money on the card. And so originally that you had to use ACH to do it, but then that took like, you know, 2 business days. And so then they introduced the instant debit card funding. So you put your debit card on there and then it just does it as a debit card transaction and loads it immediately. So what I was doing was I was saying, well, every bill that I can possibly pay with a debit card, I'm going to use the fold card for, which was pretty much everything except for my rent. Cause I have a local landlord here and he doesn't have like a website that I can pay with, but, almost everything except for rent, was going through the fold card. And then what I was doing was I would get paid to my bank and then I would figure out my bills and do like the budget. And then I would put all of my spending money on the fold card and the rest would either go to like paying a bill that I couldn't use the fold card for, or it would go into Strike, which then converted to Bitcoin and then back to my own, cold storage. I had some issues mechanically with fold where like, oh God, it's been a long time, but it just some issues with like being able to actually put the money on. And then, you know, if something went wrong, I would end up having money on fold that I couldn't get back out. And so like the way that I ended up clearing my fold card when I switched was actually buying an Amazon gift card through their app and then just using the Amazon gift card and then not putting any more money back on.
Interesting.
So it's kind of a, like a one way dump when you go to fold. And, because I couldn't buy Bitcoin through Fold and I couldn't do certain things because Fold was a debit card, it actually was more restrictive even though I was getting rewards. And I realized that if I just used the credit card and then pay the credit card off, I was better off and I was able to, you know, hold Bitcoin for the entire month and then make it all one sweep at the end, which was a lot better because I get paid more often than once a month, obviously. So like for me, doing it multiple times a month was an extreme hassle that could end up in like several days every couple of weeks where like things were processing and pending and everything else. And it actually like almost froze me out of my money a couple of times because I was waiting to like figure out where things were and how much I had. So now I don't have to worry about any of that.
Gotcha. Yeah, that delay of having to wait for the fiat transfers to kick around and go through, it's really a bummer, especially when you're used to, when you start using Bitcoin a little bit more for day-to-day stuff. Now, you might not be making a Bitcoin transaction every day, but even, you know, Lightning's real fast, but even just doing on-chain stuff, if you're paying attention to, you know, Block Explorer and seeing what the fees to get into the next block are, And for the last, you know, year or so, fees have been pretty low. Usually when I go to make an on-chain transaction and I go check what the current fees are, probably more than 50% of the time, it's one sat per byte. And so assuming that happens, you know, of course, you know, half the time I go like, oh, one sat per byte, and I put transaction through, and it's, and it feels like it's like, oh, this is the time that, you know, takes 3 hours for the next block to come in. But, you know, it's, you know, give the fair average, it works itself out. Is it within 10 minutes, you're probably going to get on the next block with a pretty reasonable fee. And so the difference between an on-chain final settlement that you can do usually within an hour at a pretty cheap cost compared to ACH transfers, which take 2-3 days and don't happen over the weekends. I mean, it's pretty fantastic. I mean, I was, and I forgot to do it. I wanted to liquidate some Bitcoin to pay down my HELOC, and I was like, oh, I should do it now, but it was Friday or Saturday, and I'm like, well, I'm just gonna like waste the weekend of not holding Bitcoin. While that, you know, that kind of churns around and has to wait till the next business day, which is Monday, before it sets the trend, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it's, yeah, I mean, the legacy system is just so terrible. And yeah, so, I guess when you, go ahead.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, to add on top of that, in my particular situation, the local bank that I use actually has a very, I'm going to call it a bare bones front end on their website. So what happens is there's actually like a step one and a step two to every ACH transfer. So when any transaction comes in, there's like a step one where it shows up in the system, and then it has a step two where it actually finalizes. Well, on my bank's website, it actually shows each step. So like if something's pending, it can go through the step one process and then fall off and disappear from my pending transactions and my available balance. And then the step two happens the next day, which, you know, leaves me in an issue where like I'll check my bank knowing that the transaction is there, but it actually isn't there and it's not showing in my available balance either. So it would end up having like all sorts of issues just even knowing how much money I had. And with Bitcoin, I never have that. If there's a transaction on chain, the wallet tells you until it's confirmed, that's not yours. You know what I mean?
Yeah. it's
wild,
man. You just get used to the terribleness of the fiat system and you don't realize until you get something else comes around to see what there you can have. I want to talk a little bit about, kind of the fold rewards, and I don't know what sort of credit card you're using, but does the credit card you have now give you points back or rewards or something? And if you want to talk about the, you know, the kind of comparing the two, because that's what everyone says. And I'm not trying to say that fold is bad or you shouldn't use fold necessarily. I know there's a lot of people that are on zero that like to use fold, and they do it for things like paying their mortgage,
paying their credit card off. Remember that one? So you get the fold when you pay your credit card with the fold card, you get the fold rewards and the credit card.
Oh yeah. 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 I mean, it's more steps and everything. And, but if that's worth it to you, by all means. So I'm not trying to dump all over fold, but, I just want you to, if you could talk about that a little bit.
Well, so actually, I just remembered too, one of the things about the instant debit card transfers was that you got 3 free transfers, I think, a month. And if you get, let's say you get paid once a month, that's fine because you're going to load your card and that's going to be it. But in my case, I actually get paid weekly. And if I go over the 3 times, there was a fee to do that, because they were using a third party processor to do it. So like all Fold does is the phone app. They don't even do like any of the banking, any of the ACH transfers, which, you know, none of these companies do. I don't even think Cash App does its own banking. You know what I mean? But yeah, there were fees involved as well on top of that, and it just got unmanageable. But yeah, so the rewards with Fold, obviously you spin a wheel with every transaction, and there's like a chance to get, you know, you could even win a whole Bitcoin on your spin. But there's, you know, there's odds built into it, and every once in a while they would advertise, hey, somebody just got it today, you know, like if you're in their Discord server or something. But the chances of that being you are extremely low. I will say the best reward I ever got was I walked into the liquor store and I bought a six pack of beer, and I got a $10 worth of Bitcoin as a reward. So I technically got a 100% return on that, but that was the only time. my credit card, so I'm just doing a basic Chase Freedom Unlimited. So it's I think it's 1.5 back on pretty much everything, and then it's I think 3% on dining and something else, and then you get like extra if you do travel, like if you purchase plane tickets through the Chase website, they give you 5%, I think.
Okay.
But it's, you know, it mostly I like the consistency of it, and I also like the fact, you know, like I said, with Fold, it's one way. You can't get a cash advance on a Fold card. I can get a cash advance with Chase. I can, you know, I still get deals, actually. So, for example, in the Chase website, there's an offers section, and you can select offers. I got, like, 15% back on some car parts from AutoZone once. I've gotten 10% back consistently on when I buy dog food at Petco. So it's not like I'm not getting chances for more, just like how Fold does. But as far as, like, the math goes, I don't know if Fold is consistently better or worse. I think on average, they're probably about the same.
Yeah, that was what I have thought for a while, because and you alluded to this or said it earlier, is that, you know, Fold's not doing its own banking. They're just a front end for the same kind of thing as what all these other services are. So I don't think they're getting necessarily better rates to give you cash back on. Now, it might be nice because they can kind of give it directly to you in Bitcoin. You know, I figured that, you know, your average credit card, you're probably going to be getting about 2% back. I figured that would probably be about the same for Fold. I have a Chase Amazon card, and it's 5% back on Amazon purchases, 3%, I think, for like gas and groceries and restaurants, and then 1% for everything else. And they do the, I have the same thing with those deals that I always forget that exists. So I'm always leaving that on the table if there's something available there. But I think it's all kind of the same thing across the board. I would say that the thing that might tip it in favor of the credit card thing is that the good thing about the credit cards is that, or for at least the strategy that we're doing, is that, you know, my paycheck converts all into Bitcoin as soon as I get it. And so when I'm putting credit card payments in and I'm getting those rewards, at the end of the month, I just go back and say, all right, just give me statement credit. And so it just knocks it off the amount that I owe my credit card bill. And that allows me to not have to liquidate that amount of Bitcoin at the end of the day, which isn't exactly a huge amount, but, and it all depends on what the price is doing. But, you know, the whole point of this is, like, over the long term, it's going to go up, and you want to get your Bitcoin as early as you can. Whereas when you're doing the Fold strategy, you're getting that Bitcoin back as you're spending through the month. So presumably, as you know, in the long run, as the price is going up. Now, we're in a pretty volatile period right now. We're in a bear market, and also we're talking about pennies right now. So as far as, you know, basing the rewards thing on which strategy you're going to employ, I think it's just really not that big of a difference. Like, we're saying that, or at least I'm claiming that, oh, I think the credit card thing is a little bit better than Fold, you'll probably earn a little bit more. But it's like the difference is so small. What do you think about that?
Well, I have two things to add to what you're saying. One, in this is directly related to Fold, is that with Fold, when you get Sats rewards on there, they do have minimums. So, like, you have to have a minimum of 50,000 Sats in the app, and then it has to be 30 days after that those Sats are earned. So, when I actually closed my Fold card, I had to wait a month for all of my Sats to mature and then buy the Amazon gift card or withdraw them. I think I just withdrew them. Yeah, I waited for them to mature and then I withdrew them. And then the cash, the US dollars that I had on Fold, bought the Amazon gift card. So from a self-custody standpoint, if I'm using, for example, Strike to receive my paycheck in Bitcoin, every time I get paid, technically I can withdraw that to my own wallet until I decide to sell. Now, it does make the accounting a little weird because Strike can automatically generate a CSV file for you, but it's based on the buys and sells within the app. And if you send Bitcoin to your Strike app, it shows up as dollars received because you're receiving from some other third party who may or may not be you. And then it receives into your currency that you've selected, which in our case is USD. You know, if I were from Venezuela, it would be the Venezuelan Bolivar or whatever. The point being, right now I keep my paycheck on Strike until the end of the month, and then I sell. That way it shows up as a sell in the Strike app and makes it easier for me to account. If I were to withdraw to my own self-custody, then I would have to be more careful with my own accounting and say, okay, that was a sell, not just me sending to another wallet or something. But in either case, I still have the opportunity to self-custody that while with Fold. It's just sort of sitting there, and like they are free sats that you're getting back, so it's not that big of a deal, but it is sitting there on their system until they decide that you can have it. And then my second point, and this is probably the most important and I haven't brought it up till now, but so I get paid weekly, and you know, there's always this sort of like chasing the next paycheck that happens when you get paid weekly or even biweekly. Like if I get paid and then I spend my money throughout the week, and then, you know, that day right before payday, I'm sitting here going, okay, I have to make sure I don't buy any snacks out of the vending machine, and then I'm going to get paid at midnight, right? With being on the credit card system, what I'm actually able to do is elongate my time preference to a month. And so now, like, all of my budgeting I can do first thing in the month. If I need to, you know, do a car repair or anything like that, I can afford it right at the beginning of the month. I can do it whenever I want. I don't have to, you know, remember to save $50 this paycheck so that next paycheck I can pay for something. It's actually been probably the best thing for me, just from a stress standpoint, that now I budget on a monthly basis and not a weekly basis.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, and that, I think that's a real... Just in general, just a really good benefit, a really good practice strategy. Because I used to get paid weekly when I first started working, and I was trying to budget on a spreadsheet and everything. And yeah, I was trying to do it like week to week, and it's a huge hassle, and it's frustrating and painful and scary. So yeah, that monthly budgeting just makes life so much better. Especially when you can, like you said, you can charge your credit card. I mean, you know how much you're going to get paid every month, more or less. And so you can charge stuff up front, knowing what you, and then you basically have a month to pay it off after you charge it. It's like you can plan, you can stretch things out. You can make good plans. If you go over your budget the 1 month, then, you know, you're seeing that as it's happening, as opposed to being like trying to catch it that week and then trying to scramble for the next week. Just the ability to have some time frames that allow you to be flexible is a really good thing. Regardless of whether you're just doing regular, you know, totally on fiat or on Bitcoin.
Yeah, and then on top of that, so like I've and I, this can lead up into kind of like the big math thing that I want to do with you guys, but what I have been able to do since starting that style of budgeting is actually raise my savings rate on a monthly basis. So I now save probably I did the math the other day. It was 15% of my income, which I think is pretty high compared to most Americans. And you know, if I go over budget, I'm just eating into what I would have thrown back. And obviously I'm going to stop myself well before that. But, point being, like my budget that I'm spending every month is actually a lot lower than the amount that I make. And that gets into like your, you know, one of the things that I like that you always like to bring up is, get on zero is really easy if you have a positive cash flow.
Right.
Yeah. So I was starting to do a little bit of math because I hadn't actually heard anybody talk about this, but having that higher savings rate got me thinking. You know, there's the criticism that's a little sort of ill-conceived is if you are on zero, so all of your money's in Bitcoin and the Bitcoin tanks, oh no, you're poor now, right? So how poor am I if Bitcoin tanks this month? That's the question I want to answer. So if I save 15% of my income, how far does Bitcoin have to drop before I'm screwed? And I'm dipping into like that, the Bitcoin drop dips into my monthly budget that month. Cause, you know, it's not like we all bought a year's worth of Bitcoin at the beginning of the year. We're buying it every month throughout the year. So it's really only this month that we're worried about, right?
Right.
So
yeah, I guess the one thing that I'll say, because I've experienced this a little bit, is that there are certain expenses that only come up once a year. And like my property tax bill, things like that, kind of larger chunks of expenses. And even though I've saved for them, it's that amount of money that month when I get the paycheck and I kind of put it in my budget. I use software called YNAB, and it allows, it's like the bucket method or the envelope method. And so when I say, oh, okay, well, I need this bill's due once a year, and so every month I'm going to set aside the cost of the bill divided by 12 for the 12 months. Because Bitcoin's been dropping since I've been on zero, then you know the power of that Bitcoin has been dropping. And so there's been a couple months where those expenses come due, and it's like, oh well, all right, now I'm spending a little bit more Bitcoin than I would have otherwise to pay that off. That said, you know, I have a pretty good cushion on that kind of stuff. And the other thing I love to talk about is my home equity line of credit, which is not everyone's going to have available to them, but that helps me. That would help me if I did hit a spot where it was like. So there is, I guess the point there is that, and I don't disagree with what you're saying, because at the same time, while that Bitcoin I saved a year ago doesn't have nearly the purchasing power today as it did then, my positive cash flow means that I am accumulating a lot more Bitcoin right now. So like mom not getting wiped out. It's just that there's certain times, and also on like that little chart that I'm showing of my overall Bitcoin balance, the trend, if it's going up or down or not. You know, a lot of that's just because, all right, here's an expense that's hitting right now. And so now, yeah, it's going to drop the Bitcoin balance, whether or not the price has been going up or down or whatever. But overall, my trend is still going up despite, you know, the losses and everything there. So, yeah, I just wanted to, because I never really talked about that, I don't think. And that what you just said just kind of triggered that thought in my head. So
sure. Yeah. I was thinking about this in preparation for coming on, but I think like you and I kind of look at it, are looking at it on opposite ends of the same equation, where like when you say like my Bitcoin balance is going up, that's great because the goal is to have more Bitcoin. So you're winning. All right. I'm doing is I'm looking at the dollar side of it and saying, okay, so I get paid in dollars. So what's my monthly budget on that side of it? And how, you know, it may feel like I'm being more negative, but I do think it's a risk assessment that needs to be done. Like how much dollar value am I losing in the meantime? You know, having more Bitcoin is great and I'm all for that, which is why I'm on zero. But it's, you know, like I said, we just got to look at both sides of them. But I do, just a quick aside, I do think that there is a difference between savings, which deals with uncertainty, and a planned expense. So, like, I wouldn't even call you off zero if you were to keep your tax money in dollars in a bank account, just because, in my mind, if you know what that tax bill is, it's not going to change because it's not a volatile asset. You know what I mean? Like, Bitcoin is volatile and stocks are volatile, but, like, a planned expense is a planned expense. So, like, for example, like, my rent is the same every month, and it hasn't changed since I started living here 2 years, 3 years ago. If I were to keep my rent amount in a bank account, I wouldn't call that off zero, because that's just me making sure that rent gets paid. Like, it's just holding, yeah, it's just sitting there being held. So that would be my one little pushback on that, is just because, like, savings does deal with uncertainty, and if an expense is certain, then holding those USD for, you know, next week when your credit card bill comes due or when rent comes due, I don't consider that to even be a form of savings at all. So it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I'll push back for what I'm doing, and my strategy of it is that I feel like I have a big enough runway and good enough cash flows that if Bitcoin does get cut, I mean, because like I said, I started off when Bitcoin was at its all-time high, so like $66,000. So, you know, we can talk, what happens if your Bitcoin gets cut in half? It's been cut in half twice on me, so.
Right.
So,
right.
And I'm still plenty solvent. So as long as you have a decent runway, I could see if you've got a larger fiat expense that, you know, it's coming up in a year and it's in a, we're in a bear or whatever, you know, it's, you know, your risk is your risk. But I feel like my runway is long enough that I can, that I'm willing to take these hits right now in these bear markets, because there's going to reach a point where I'm buying Bitcoin at this low price and it's going to hit that pivot point where it starts going up again. And so, you know, I might set aside some money, some Bitcoin, to say in January, to say, all right, well, this is my monthly setting aside, putting it into this envelope for my my annual taxes for real estate taxes. And by the time that bill is due, you know, that first year I did it, it's, you know, that what should have been 1/12 of what the cost was if I was holding fiat is now, call it, you know, 1/24th or 1/28th. But if the price is going up, then, you know, by the time that bill gets due, we might be at a point where I'm only paying, you know, half of what I saved in January to pay for the entire year. So that's where I'm like, okay with doing what I'm doing, is because I'm like, this is not going to go down forever. If we're Bitcoiners and we're in this long for the long run, we think it's going to monetize. Of course it has to change direction. It has to start going up. And so I want to be there in time for that. So that like my first month's pay pays for my expenses for the year or something like that. But that's the goal. And that's why I'm comfortable and willing to take the risk and the losses right now that I am, in order to gain that benefit.
Sure. Yeah, no, I agree 100%. It's but that leads directly into, so how much can Bitcoin fall this month before I'm no longer saving money, right? Because your savings rate, you're talking about a runway, that's your savings rate, right? And I definitely have that. And, you know, I've got more savings than I've ever had in my life right now. And I actually feel comfortable that I could take, you know, a month off work and not, you know, I would be able to pay all of my expenses and be fine.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's great. And so I do that. But how much, so really it's not like my long-term savings that I'm even worried about, because I totally agree that Bitcoin will turn around. But while we're in a bear market, how far can it go? So if I'm the math that I was doing is, if I have 15% savings rate, let's see. So how did I do this? So if I look at Strike and I click on the 1 year price for Bitcoin, last time I did it, it was 64%. Right now it's showing down 59%. I'll use today's number, 59% down, and then divide that by 12, and that gives us the monthly average, right? So 0.59 divided by 12. So we are down 0.049, or I'm just going to call it 5% a month on average, right? Mm-hmm. And then, like I said, I'm saving 15% of my income, so I think it's... How does the I want to double check my math. Is it just 5% would be 1/3 of my savings rate, because it's 5%, so 15%, like I'm actually saving 10% then if we're 5% a month?
Yeah, I'm thinking through this. Anybody so
have thoughts?
I know some people can
rip
just
off
like
numbers off the top
off
of head,
this,
right.
off the top of their heads. But I am so bad with this kind of stuff, trying to think on the fly with it.
Well, if we're down 60% year over year, and say a year ago it was $100, and you're averaging that out, you know, that's where the 5% per month would be. So it's 5% on that base, not, you know, 5% on the balance, I guess. You know,
right. Oh yeah. Sorry. Okay. So this is what I had done. So, and walking me through this is helping me remember how I did this. So you have to take the dollar amount. So for me, that's at my current budgeting, that's about $500 a month. So $500, it would be 5% of that every month, which is what, $10?
Yeah.
No, because 10% is 50, so $25.
$25. My bad. Okay, so $25 is what I'm losing. So if Bitcoin would have to go down, I guess it would have to go down. No. Or would it be based on how much money I have? Because if I wait till the end of the month to convert back into dollars, is it on my entire balance? And then, okay.
It's tough to build on the fly, because if you're buying, say you're selling at the end of the month, and I don't know what your expenses and your income and all that are, but if it was, you know, $20,000 on the first of the month and then $5,000 on the 31st, but on the last paycheck, it was $6,000, you know, you lost, you know, 1/6 there in that last week. But if you're using that bucket or using that tranche to pay back, you haven't lost as much as you did on that first paycheck in the month, if that makes sense. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Well, I was just going to say, I'm washing that because I know that makes it more complicated, because we could count this every week, but I want to just count it on the month and then know that I'm doing better than the number I come up with, right?
You're buying Bitcoin on the first of the month, and then you're paying expenses
on the 31st.
Okay.
So in this case, let's say I quote unquote bought Bitcoin with my entire month's paychecks. And in my case, and I'm, you know, I'll just use the right numbers because it makes sense to me. $3,300 a month. Okay. I'm middle class. I'm not ashamed of it. $3,300 a month. if I take 5% off of that, that's $165. So I would lose $165, or I am, on average for the past 12 months, losing $165 in doing this. But like I said, I'm saving $500 a month.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, right. I understand the question now.
So now I'm losing, what am I losing? I'm actually saving $345 or $335 is what I'm quote unquote actually saving. But I'm doing better than that because I get paid every week. And if I think about it, I am actually saving $500, because when I sell the Bitcoin and then pay my bills, the $500 is what's left at the end of the month, not the beginning.
Right.
So I am
assuming the price is going down all month, and yeah, you're doing better because you're buying throughout the month, and we're calculating as if you bought it all on the first.
Right. But what I'm saying is that if I bought it on the first, I'm not saving the $500 on the first. I'm saving it at the end after the loss is incurred, even. So.
Right. So if your savings rate, you assuming no drop in the price, is 15%, then you can 15% loss of the Bitcoin value is what you're looking at.
I would just have to be able to absorb 15% is what it would be.
Yeah.
That's just the number.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's look back at the history a little bit. How many?
Yeah.
15%?
So currently, I'm triple the bear market on average in my savings rate. So my runway is triple the drop that I'm absorbing.
Okay. Yeah, I'm trying to look at this chart. Yeah, I mean, I've had some pretty gnarly drops in this bear market, so I don't know. We'd have to sit down and really run the numbers. But like you and Slappy already said, you know, you're not getting paid once a month. You're getting paid once a week, and so you're really absorbing a lot of that through with that cash flow coming in. Mm-hmm. You're not taking that hit all the time. And also, I mean, the price goes up, it goes down. Yeah, it's all right. About it's really like you have to look and see. You have to do just accounting. You have to look at what your own numbers are as you're going through this. And I think, you know, you've been doing this for, I guess, a little bit over a year now. And it's like, are you better off today than you were a year ago?
Absolutely.
Right. So there's
that's kind of the important part. Of,
right. And we can say this not because, and I say this all the time, that's why I'm like glad that the price has done nothing but drop since we decided. Because
if it was going up, we'd all be way more wealthy. But it wouldn't prove anything. Exactly. It would not prove anything. It wouldn't prove anything. Anyone can save, anyone can be successful in Bitcoin when the price skyrockets.
Yeah, every stupid idea that has anything to do with Bitcoin always works great when the price is going up. But how many scams blow up when, you know, you've got a couple of months where the price doesn't appreciate? So not that this proves that you're going to stay solvent forever or, you know, no matter what happens, but the fact that you are better off than you were when you started, and we've sustained, I mean, basically, we're at 25% of the price that we started at.
It's pretty impressive.
Pretty significant. So what is that? I mean, we lost 75% of the value over, what, like 15 months? Let me do this. Let me run...
Yeah.
Crunch these numbers really quick. So starting from, call it 66,000 minus, call it 17,000. So that's 49,000.
2,000 a month or so.
Divided by 66,000. So yeah, it's 75% loss on 66,000. And then we divide that by
12.
Call it 15 months.
Okay, 15.
Yeah, it's 5%. Yeah. It's the same thing. It's 4.9%. So, I mean, that's funny that that
it's really not that scary once you actually look at it on a monthly basis, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Now you're right. Because I was kind of, well, we've had some 15% drops. You can look at that year long
and be like, yeah, it'd be like, oh no, Bitcoin is totally dead now. And then you look at it on a monthly and you're like, well, how is this any different than the rest of the market
right now? Right. Yeah. Can I sustain that? This is really interesting because I never really thought about it this way, but it's like, okay, yes, Bitcoin's going to drop, but on average, can I sustain a 5% drop in my earnings? Yes. Like that's not really that big of a deal, especially if you've got savings.
You know, and it's not even
consistent savings month to month.
You remember all the commercials where it was like it would be a podcast, and whether it was a Bitcoin podcast or not, and they'd be like, you know, you can support me for just the price of a cup of coffee, and now I'm looking at that cup of coffee and thinking of it like this is the that 5% drawdown in Bitcoin, and it's like, oh, okay, I bought an extra cup of coffee today. Big whoop.
Right. It's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
And the great thing is that this only is applicable to when the price when
it's
is
going up,
dropping
not that issue there.
Pretty harshly.
Which we expect.
Right. The other thing that absorbs some of this is that you can harvest those losses. So I guess up to what, $3,000 is what you're allowed to claim as a loss for each. For
I don't
year.
Know. You got to talk to your accountant on that, which I guess you'll be doing shortly.
Yeah. Yes.
Now, okay, that's something I should ask. Do you have an accountant, or is it just the
TurboTax type deal?
Yeah, it's my accountant is TurboTax right now.
But is it like a standard deal, or do I have to know somebody?
As far as,
well, like, do you just walk in and get like the same person every time, or like, what do you do?
Oh, no, I use TurboTax, and so it's just all online software.
Oh, you just do the online, okay?
Yeah, although cool. I never had to do now since I've been liquidating Bitcoin, and there's no I will be claiming, you know, the selling and the purchases of Bitcoin. I'll just go and probably just do it manually. And figure out what I want, what lots,
I wonder how much
I want to claim.
Well, that'll be interesting when the taxes are done. Because I keep a spreadsheet, and I think a spreadsheet's all you need, right?
Yeah. I think so.
Just have a CPA in the family I use. And
I can't believe I'm about to admit this on podcast, but I lost my spreadsheet in a boat.
Yeah, that's a shame.
It literally, like, my laptop just died, and I hadn't backed it up yet.
Oh, yeah.
So I have to redo the whole spreadsheet.
Lovely.
I'm not looking forward to tax season.
No, that sounds pretty brutal. But fortunately, you know, like you said, Strike will send you a CSV file.
And
right. Yeah, or actually, I just looked through the app, through the transactions, and it shows you Bitcoin sales and buys.
Yeah,
and
I was going to say.
Copy and paste.
They're not going to hammer you either if you're close to accurate, you know, unless you're doing like millions of dollars. They're probably, I mean, I say that and then you'll be like, thanks, Lappy, I got audited. But,
right.
As long as you're in the ballpark, I think you're good.
Okay. Cool. Well, you guys want to, so this is my last example and then, but, my one planned expense this year is Childeberg, and that's so I'm thinking about just I'm not sure if I want to save that in USD or not in preparation for the possibility of gas prices going up because we are still in a bear market. Yeah. But that's probably what I'm going to do. So speaking of planned expenses, and I'm really looking forward to it.
You can buy gas futures.
Here we go.
See, there's no way that can go wrong.
Right. I think they're a little harder to sell than Bitcoin, though.
Yeah.
Later on.
Speaking of that, but Childeberg is
on the horizon.
Is coming around. And so if you're not on the email list, you should get on. Go to childerberg.com and sign up for the newsletter. And I think you can I need to buy my spot. But yeah, go buy your spot. I manage the BTC pay server for that. So if you want to help us out, go and open up a channel, a Lightning channel, to our node there, and that'll help us out with getting liquidity. Especially since my Raspberry Pi died on me. We lost the main source of liquidity for that, for the Childerberg Lightning node. So,
is that listed on childerberg.com, the actual node ID, or?
I don't think so. But if you just go and do like a dummy transaction, like go buy a campsite and then go to pay, and then it'll bring you to the BTC pay server page. You can find the node there.
Oh yeah, that's
just
right.
Just don't pay the invoice and let it expire.
Gotcha.
Or just reach out to me directly, and for anyone listening, and I could give you that information. I think Jacob said he was going to post it on the website or something, or in one of the upcoming newsletters. So that'll be cool. Good. And I just need to do a better job of managing liquidity myself, but I want like it to be a community effort. You know, part of the goal of this, of the whole Childerberg thing, is to get people off the dollar and start, you know, it's all about freedom and living outside of what the state wants us to do and doing our own thing. And Bitcoin provides us with a great opportunity for that. So yeah, I could just go and totally manage all the liquidity and make it like super easy and not have to think about it for anybody. But, you know, I want more audience participation in it. I want people to try to figure out the sovereignty behind this stuff and pull a little bit of weight there. So probably you're just being lazy. Yeah, that also has something to do with it too, but but it's fun. It's fun. And I think it's time very well worth spent figuring out the Lightning network and playing around with it and stuff. So
I don't know. Any words? Any like?
Is there anything else?
How was it your first year? Were you nervous when you first hopped on? Everything pretty smooth from there, or now you're over a year in? It's got to be pretty comfortable.
Yeah, I think I was. I mean, other than my original hassles using Fold, I've been pretty comfortable this whole time. But the only thing that makes me nervous is tax season, which is now coming up. So once it gets into that, I will have more to say about that afterwards. But right now, it's the actual process is extremely convenient, and I'm not stressing at all. I'm just happy to be doing something that I believe in and participating in that with you guys. So
yeah, well, we're thrilled to have you on board with it and very happy for you to come on and share your thoughts. It's always fun, even though we're like basically kind of doing the same exact strategy. What's so fun about doing these episodes and bringing on other people is that something that's in their head, something that little nuanced thing that they do triggers a totally different thought and a new idea and a new way to look at it, and just realizing that for me, the big takeaway was, you know, sustaining a 5% loss in a month.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's what we've been doing on average. That's really not that bad considering how far everything's come down. In the meantime, while you're not just getting paid once a month, I'm bi-monthly. But you're you know, call it four times a month, once a week. So it's that 5% really isn't hitting us at 5%. It's actually probably less than that. So I think that's really cool stuff. And speaking of taxes, the second half of my 401k liquidation from last year. That hefty tax bill will be coming in. So, I shudder at the thought. But I've got that. I got the HELOC that will help out there. So, just put it on credit.
Yep.
wait down the road to pay it off. And with that, I've talked about this too, is that I'm basically adding. So the amount of Bitcoin I bought with my 401k, basically the liquidation value of my 401k, I'm adding the tax bill onto that number. And then dividing that by the amount of Bitcoin I bought from it and saying that, okay, this is the price that it's worth for me to start paying that debt off. If I want to clear that HELOC out a little bit in order to use it for something else, if I want to use that credit for something else. Because otherwise, you know, I don't want to sell the that IRA Bitcoin at a price lower than what I bought it for, because then that's getting chewed away. So if I can wait for that higher, and that price is, I liquidated the 401k when the price was like $40,000+. And so now I have to wait for the price to be up around more like in the 60s to make it make sense. But I know, like, now I have numbers to it. I know when it makes sense for me to stop accumulating Bitcoin and start paying down this debt versus just kind of holding on to that debt, letting it go. And I still have the cash flows to maintain one way or the other. It's just my way to kind of maximize my strategy of accumulating Bitcoin.
Sure. Yeah. I have noticed.
Sense, 'cause it barely made sense as it was coming out of my mouth, but
it made sense to me after pondering for a moment while you were talking. But I have noticed that you've definitely got more of a strategy going on, whereas I'm still, and I don't know if this is like, maybe we came in from different financial points, but I did have a little bit of debt when I came in, and so I have yet to like push anything off till the next month. I always pay my credit card off that month. I don't, you know, I have a sick aversion to credit cards at all due to some things from the past, and so I, you know, where you're talking about, hey, I can hold on to this Bitcoin a month longer, I'm very shy.
So, I get that.
But yeah, we're doing the same strategy, but we're also handling ourselves differently. And I think that's fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, definitely differences. One thing I don't carry, I pay my credit card bill off in full every month. I definitely do that. The big difference though for me is that since I have a house, I own a house. I had enough equity in it that I was able to get that home equity line of credit out. And when I got it, my interest rate is like 3.5%. So it's like stupid low. So, you know, if I were paying 18% interest or something for that credit line, then no, I would not be. It's like, yeah, I could but when it's like 3.5%, yeah, I'll push that debt off there for a while. And again, this is all manageable within my current cash flows. If something happened where it was like, no, you need to start paying that debt off right now on the terms of the loan, then yeah, I could do it, and it's not going to really, you know, affect my day to day living that much to do that. I'll just have to not save it at the clip I was previous. And then the other thing I took advantage of, well, maybe not advantage because the interest rate is actually a little bit higher. The IRS, you can go on a payment plan with them. And so I'm on a payment plan with them, but I'm putting that monthly payment onto the HELOC. So once I finish paying off, once I finish, because what I did with the 401k is when I was liquidating it, it was right at the end of the year in 2021 going into 2022. And so in order to basically split the tax bill or make that tax bill happen as late as I could, but also I wanted to buy the Bitcoin, was that I liquidated half of it right at the end of 2021 and then liquidated the other half right in the beginning of 2022. So I didn't have to pay taxes. I could delay paying taxes on the first half for like 4 months until April, and then 16 months basically for the other half. So my hope was that Bitcoin was going to appreciate in value, and it was going to be like, you know, by the time that tax bill came, it was like, oh yeah, I could just pay, you know, 1% of what I bought the Bitcoin from the IRA from would pay off this tax bill. It hasn't worked out that way, but you know, I'm in a fortunate position where I can play with some credit instruments and delay that payment. So yeah. So all that said, it's just different people have different positions they're in, and you got to understand what you have available to you and just be responsible about it. And, you know, make sure that the balances you care about going up are going up, you know, in the long run. And, yeah, just pay attention to what you're doing and don't over leverage yourself. That's the key. Yep. Don't risk.
Keep two hands on the wheel.
Yeah. Risk your dollars, but don't risk your Bitcoin.
Yep. Exactly. I think a lot of it really just boils down to, you know, all the financial advice you heard as a kid from your grandparents applies to Bitcoin just as much as anything else. And all we're doing is, you know, figuring out what that buffer zone is, like with the 5% a month drop that we were talking about. That's the only thing we've added to, you know, to worry about. But otherwise, it's just, you know, save money, live within your means, don't run up the credit card. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the big thing is I think what definitely is what we have in common, I think all three of us, is that we live below our means. And when you do that, that affords you a lot more leeway and strategy and gives you the opportunity to manage risk a little bit more aggressively than you would be able to if you were living paycheck to paycheck or were negative cash flow. When you're negative cash flow and accumulating debt that you can't pay off, then I mean that's just a whole different story, and you need to that's something that you absolutely need to correct, regardless of whether or not you're on fiat or Bitcoin.
Sorry,
I cut you off there.
No, I was trying to pop in real quick for a quip. They told me that I could forex my Bitcoin if I leveraged it.
Yeah, that could be a mistake.
Yeah.
Oh man,
that's a funny thing. Is that we're like, we get told, it's way to get on zero is way too risky. And these people are listening to the podcast that say, don't do get on zero. And their podcasts are sponsored by like BlockFi and,
yep,
and these other things that tell you to, you can lock your Bitcoin. You can send us your Bitcoin so you get a fiat loan. And hopefully the price doesn't go down too much because then we just liquidate you. So,
hey, you get to hold it the whole time. We won't even touch your Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was like, yeah. But I don't want to get into that, but that's funny. So, yeah. All right. Any closing thoughts? And if not, do you want to tell the audience where they can find you if you want to be found?
Well, so I've been off Twitter for over a year now, I think, but I am on the Fediverse. The bag.social is back up, so you can follow me at agora_brewing at the bag.social. And make an account there if you want to join in on some self-hosted, not owned by anyone, social media.
@agora_brewing
At the bag.social. So the bag.social is the website, and then the tag is my account. And there's, you know, other websites that all federate together. And so, like, you have a bitcoinhackers.org account, yeah. Right?
So I think so.
I can see you, and you can see me if you ever log in.
Yep. And are you still blogging at agora.brewing?
Well, agorabrewing.blog does still exist. I haven't blogged in quite some time. I returned to work right before the holiday season, and I've just been working overtime, and that's all I've been doing. So,
well, that's fine. But for those that haven't gone, because we had you on the show to talk about an article or two you've written.
That's true.
Even though you haven't put anything there in a while, there's some definitely things that are worth reading over there. So if you have not checked that out, go check both of those things out. So, Cody, once again, thank you for coming on. This was a good episode. This was a lot of fun. I love talking about this stuff. Hopefully I think every different person we come on gives a little bit different perspective. I think it hits everyone a little bit differently. And so that's why I'm not afraid to be redundant and talk about the same thing over and over again with different guests over and over again, because, you know, different people, this stuff is going to click in different ways. So, and also I'm learning from it. So it's selfishly motivated as well. So.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me back on, and I'm glad I could bring you some good food for thought.
Absolutely. All right, everyone. Show notes page for this will be mcflugel.com/339. Also, getonzero.com/31 if I ever update that. So, all right. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week.